So today we're going to talk about what you need to consider when you're deploying Link, and specifically Link Enterprise Voice, right? What we find typically, and I've personally been working with the Link team for about 7 years now, and if I look at all the different deployments that we've done, you know, basically through our partners like yourselves and, you know, obviously directly with customers too, the IAM and presence side, nice and easy, like Exchange, you put it in, it's all good. But when you actually come to do the enterprise voice piece, it becomes a little bit more difficult, right? There's different things like regulatory requirements and country requirements, some of the things like that that make it a little bit more thorny. So this is the objective of this slide deck was to give you guys a, from what we consider a best practice on what's the best way to actually deploy a Link Enterprise Voice and do it in a way that's going to give the best overall user experience, because that's ultimately what you're looking to do. And the first thing is to make sure you have a good strategy, right? If you have a good strategy, it gives you, you know, good success. You do have to be prepared that you will have challenges, right? There are going to be challenges. And then, of course, you know, make sure that you're able to make everything work together. But if you know the challenges up front, of course, it's going to be much easier. And I do apologize if I walk back and forth. I have a problem standing still. And I make a big noise, too, by the sounds of things. So, first point. So, this deck is going to, this presentation, this session is going to cover the 5 points to do, as I said. First one is have a well-defined strategy. So what exactly does that mean? You have a lot of diverse requirements, right? Whether it's people bringing their own devices in, you know, having basically PSTN telephony, so doing that PBX replacement piece. You've got video, you've got mobile devices, which are a big part, which you saw in the keynote yesterday. Obviously, mobile devices are something that are really, really important. And I know personally when the Wi-Fi doesn't work so well at the hotel, this thing seems to work well, so that's good. You would think in Vegas the Wi-Fi would be better, but anyway, it isn't. If you rate a hotel on Wi-Fi, it doesn't go that good. SIP telephony, so you know, being able to do modern SIP trunks, which obviously have a huge ROI advantage. UC applications, like Link, obviously, and then linking it in with social media. So ultimately, if we look at how communications have changed the way we do business, right? I'll look at, I actually run R&D team where we develop the SBC products we were talking about, and we have development centers all over the world, right? Just in North America alone, we have 4 development centers in the West Coast and California, in Westford, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, and in Illinois, and then in Bangalore and the UK. And if it wasn't for Unified Communications, honestly, we would number one spend a lot more on air travel, I can guarantee you that much, and the products would never be as robust as they are. You know, being able to share code, put things up, and I mean, that's just an example. Obviously, that one's very close to my heart, but the same as examples for everybody. Whether you're working on slide decks for a sales pitch, or if you're sharing code to put it through, you can do it all by having real-time communications that has, you know, content share, video share, all those other pieces. You just feel far more engaged. You're able to plug in better by having all the communications that go in. However, when you come to actually do those deployments, a lot of people think, well, I've got my old PBX, I've got Link, I've deployed IAM and Presence. All I need to do is just turn on Enterprise Voice, and I'm there, right? Nirvana just looks straight across. Reality looks something more like this. You kind of veer off one side, you think you're going to try SIP trunks, you think you're going to try. It never quite goes as smoothly as you would like. So with that in mind, you know, what are the things that are actually going to need to solve? So first things, interoperability. So PBXs are diverse and proprietary. Why? Because the vendors that made them wanted to make sure that you were locked in, right? So they wanted to make sure that there was actually changing standards. And that was true even from a PSTN perspective. So each one of the vendors implements, even though they all go, oh, we all implemented SIP, they actually have a lot of different changes and pieces within them. So you actually have to have something that will actually solve that interoperability. You have dial plan limitations. So managing dial plans all over the place in the network is not really a good thing. Obviously, with Link, you can do some of it. There's other pieces you can do with local long distance, etc. You want to put new technology, right, as things start coming in, like, as I mentioned, you know, mobile clients and you know, the next big thing, whether it be a social media piece. You want it to be able to come in quickly. You need to be able to interwork legacy pieces, whether it's SIP and H.323. And then, obviously, you want to roll out Link across your whole network. From a migration perspective, you've got actual connectivity leaving the system. So being able to make it come from TDM PBXs to IP PBXs, SIP trunking, mobile pieces, all those are needed. And then when you start actually rolling from the headquarters location, because that's normally the easiest to deploy, right? So you deploy headquarters, you're good there, you think everything's good. Now you want to go out to all the branch locations, and it becomes a little more difficult because now you can't consolidate everything in. What do you do about survivability? Can those people just use their cell phones? Or are there alternatives? And I'll talk a little more about that later on in the deck. 911, emergency services, all that needs to be able to work. Contact centers, right? Like it or not, the contact center's evolving, and yes, we can now message the cable company and stuff through the little web chat, but the reality, most of it still actually happens as voice calls. And contact centers require things like being able to fork it off, recording, all that kind of thing. So there's a lot of different stuff you've got to take in for a contact center. When you're actually doing migration and consolidation, it gets pretty complicated, right? As soon as we bring up, this is supposed to be a Dash 200 session, so I bring up a diagram like this, it's like, ooh, okay. So basically, what we're doing here is actually doing a lot of conversion. We've got SIP trunks coming in. We've got different vendors coming in. It gets really, really complicated. 85% of enterprises deploying Link have legacy infrastructure they don't want to rip and replace. And this is something that you have to think really hard about. I've seen a number of times where enterprises deploy IAM in presence. They then turn on peer-to-peer voice and video, but they don't turn on enterprise voice. So now what you have is, do I use the desk phone or do I use my Link with the headset, and what do I use when? And I can't call back to the cell phone and I can't make it work. It basically, you end up in this very confusing state. So the longer that you actually leave your enterprise in that state, the worse you are. The perception of Link starts to go down because they don't know what to go when. It's much easier when you just have one system and you're good to go, right? We're all about promoting smooth migration, but having it so that Link can do everything, and then having it so that the phone is still there for the people that, for some reason, and I have no idea why, still want to use that dust collector, that phone. You know, you can call it a desk phone or a dust collector, one of the two, but you have to have it that way. So 85% of Link deployments have existing infrastructure. 15% are a pure play Link. I have a $10 Skype, couple of $10 Skype calls. Who thinks, who in the audience, think they know what that 15% is? Anybody have any idea? Greenfield, yes, exactly. And how would you typically have a greenfield? Yeah, that's the most common work case we found. So a new facility, so. Yeah, it can be a 365 case as well. Basically, but typically somebody's moving to a new building. And I've seen that a number of times where they went, yep, we've decided we're going to move to a new facility. That's when we're going to turn on Link Enterprise Voice. We're going to leave the PBX where it is. It's going to be in the old building. We're going to move over, and we're not bothering to wire the system to have multiple outlets. That's the most typical greenfield. There's so few rip and replace. I don't think we've seen a single deployment where they've gone, okay, everybody, when you go home tonight, you're going to have your desk phone, and when you come in the morning, the desk phone's gone, and the Link is going to be on your system, right? It just doesn't work like that. You end up with a terrible user experience. Users hate change, no idea why that they do, and everybody throws up on it and goes, no, you know, I hate Link, Link sucks, right? And the whole point is to make sure that you want to get a nice, smooth migration to that. So with that, I'm going to have Boris come up and actually tell us a little bit about why it's so important to have a really good user experience coming in from your devices.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kevin.
Sure.
So my name is Boris Siebert. I'm the Strategic Alliance Manager for Plantronics, managing the Microsoft relationship. And I normally start off a session with a story, and And one of the stories I really embrace when we talk about understanding how your company works and the adoption of a new technology or change management that Kevin mentioned is I always use the analogy of when you get a new Bluetooth headset, the first thing you do is you pair it to your phone, you put it on your head, you might look in the mirror to see how it looks on you, and the first thing you do is make a phone call to your wife or husband, right? Right? It's everyone does it. And if your wife or husband then says, what are you talking on? It's really staticky. What's going on? Call me back. Or in my case, my wife says, you're testing out a new headset again. Get off that thing, right? Because I test a lot of competitive headsets. So what do you... Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate that, Scott. And so what do? Right? So we have this Bluetooth headset. We just invested, let's say, $75 and put it on our head and made that moment of truth phone call, right? And am I going to go now find the vendor's phone number and ask for support and see what maybe I need to do to troubleshoot it and figure out maybe I did something wrong? No. It goes in the trash can or your file cabinet, and you're kind of done with that headset, right? Everyone does that. And so why do I tell that story relative to Link? Well, when people get Link for the first time, they're going to have an experience, right? And that experience will be that moment of truth. And if you give them a USB corded headset, works perfectly fine for audio, but don't understand their use case, and you have them put on that headset and they make that phone call to their wife and something's wrong with the network, right? And you get some echo or there's chopping going on and you don't have MPLS lines in place, whatever that might be, guess what they're going to do with that headset and Link? Yeah, they're going to go back to the PBX phone. They're done, right? And so what I would like to do is show a typical day of someone, let's say a year from now, what they should expect not only from the technology that they're connecting to, but the devices that they're using. So I'll let the video speak for itself. And again, this is future.
Eye accident prone?
Looking.
You know, I read somewhere that 1 in 29 people lack spatial awareness.
Come on up.
They even have a difficult time multitasking.
I'll find it for you. It's probably right.
I'll have a little time after work.
For the email I sent, didn't you?
Here's the thing. Ever since I got my Plantronics headset and the way it works with Microsoft Link, I can't even explain it. Like in my car. Say I'm using Sync for a conference call. When I get to the office, I just slip on my Voyager Pro and the call instantly moves over to the headset. No buttons to press or redialing into the call. Bam! It just happens. As I move around the office, Bluetooth hubs detect my location, send it to Microsoft Link, and update my status. Even when I get close to my desk, my Voyager Pro just tells the screen, wake up. I am hands-free the whole time. Then the call seamlessly transfers from my Windows phone to Microsoft Link, keeping my headset connected. My Plantronics headset, Microsoft Link, and me are like this. Does it still keep me from being accident prone? Oh, hey, how you doing? Only one I've got on, my Plantronics headset.
So obviously we had a little humor there. But I think we make the point, right? Technology can really drive a user's behavior and change how they interact with technology. So our vision at Plantronics is really personalizing your connected life. And so when we start talking about things like seamless transfer, something was mentioned at the keynote by Derek yesterday, that's something a user is not expecting to happen. And when it happens, it's magical, right? They start adopting the new technology because the technology enables something that a PBX phone never enabled before, right? Being able to walk up my desk or walk away from my desk while I'm on a live call as I'm heading to another meeting, right? And when I'm heading to that other meeting, all of a sudden that call just transfers to my mobile phone. I have the ability to accept that call and keep live on that phone call. That's something you cannot do with a traditional PBX phone, right? And so we're trying to personalize that, you know, that experience that you have. And so when we take a look at our drivers at Plantronics and how people are really addressing some of the things in their workplace, you know, we always say this work is no longer a place you go to. I'm going to say work is what you do, right? And with Link, all of a sudden your behavior changed. I work at our headquarters facility. I haven't had an assigned cubicle for 11 months, right? Ever since we deployed Link and we redesigned our work facilities, there's drop-ins everywhere. I do not work in a dedicated cubicle next to people I don't really interact with, you know, for what I get my job done. I actually go sit next to the people I have to get things done, right? And so if I have to work on marketing for the Link conference, I go sit by the marketing department. We don't call meetings. We just collaborate throughout the day. And that's what people are doing today with the technology. All of a sudden, their communication, their collaborations on their PC or on their tablets, and they have devices that enable experiences. And when we start talking about the speed of the business, right, it's real time. This idea of having a voicemail, I'm not sure I even know how to dial into my voicemail system anymore, right? I don't even know what the phone number is, right? And so people are expecting real-time communication, this power of federation, and be able to escalate from a quick, hey, are you available, right? And if you're on your cell phone, right, for example, you have to say, no, I'm on my cell, right, because it says available. Well, we have an application for that, right? If you're on your mobile phone with our devices, we actually update your presence in a call, which is a powerful state. It tells someone you're actively discussing something with someone else, so they're not going to even IM you, right? When you get off that mobile call, and then it puts you back in available, so now you can be in real time, you don't get the voicemails, you don't have to play voicemail tag, you just move quickly, right? Yeah. Almost too fast.
You can even get little lights and stuff that can show up. I mean, that changing the presence, you know, when you're on your mobile phone is key. I mean, the number of times people don't realize I'm on my mobile, just while I'm in my cubicle, having it all on one's headset, that's just, you know, really is, makes it just that much better of a user experience.
Exactly right. And the last point is multi doesn't stop at multitasking, right? We are all having multiple devices, and Kevin, you alluded to it. You have your traditional PBX that's sitting there. You still have to provide audio experiences to that traditional PBX, and then you have this mobile world where you have to be on the fly, and all of a sudden you have communications on your PC. And so when you take a look at devices and making sure your use cases match up to it, I highly recommend taking a look how people are working, right? You have campus roamers. You have these mobile professionals. Get devices they'll be delighted with. Right? Because if they're not delighted and they have that moment of truth call with the wrong device, they're just going to say, what is this? This doesn't match to what I'm doing. I don't like this new technology. Give me my PBX back. Right? And my one recommendation for the moment of truth phone call, right? When you roll out Link, have them call your help desk. Right? The first call should be the help desk, and you should encourage that. Right? In any way, you should almost create incentive. And the first thing the help desk should do is make sure the audio device is set up correctly. And then have some aha moments with them. Oh, let me just show you how to do desktop share. They've never seen desktop share before. Oh, by the way, you can federate. Let me show you how to federate with someone in a different company so that way you can start connecting with them. And the user all of a sudden is like, federate? What's federate? Right? And then after they get off that phone call, all of a sudden they have had not only the moment of truth that you want them to have, they had a training moment, an aha moment, not only with their device, but also the way they're going to work in the future. So those are my insights.
Thanks, Mark. And having certified devices is really, really important, right? I've seen a number of Link implementations fail simply because they've used devices that don't go through the very, very strict audio quality tests that Microsoft has set for the certified device program, and you end up with a poor, substandard experience. Oh, I can't hear you. You know, to quote Verizon, can you hear me now? And really, it's not good. And you get echo in calls, you get echo in conference. It makes a huge difference. So if you want to have a really good Link Enterprise voice experience, make sure that you have really good devices. Yeah.
What was the question again? I'm sorry. So we have a family of products that take advantage of different things. So for example, when I say update to in a call, we have six different devices that will do that. So our speakerphone will do that. We have a corded USB headset also connects Bluetooth, and our Voyager Legend will do that, and our Savvy will do that with the PBX and mobile. So we have a full line dedicated to that smart presence application. The seamless transfer, it's got to be a Bluetooth device, so it only works on the Voyager because you have to be connected to your cell phone. Right? That is a really great question. We have a lot of samples at the booth. If you guys are interested in getting some samples, the Voyager specifically, I think we're low on, but we do have some of the speakerphones, so feel free to come by and have a discussion with us, for sure. Yeah.
I need an updated device. So with that, I'd like to introduce Scott Brown. So Scott's going to talk a little bit more about how important the actual room experience is. And this is another one that's very close to my heart, so take it away.
Absolutely. Scott. Hey, good morning. Thank you all. How's everybody, first of all? Still awake, hanging in there. Outstanding. Love Vegas, baby. Love it here for about 24 hours, and then I'm done. So my name is Scott Brown. It's an honor to share the stage this morning with these two gentlemen. And just wanted to share briefly what we're doing at Smart Technologies. As some of you may be aware, we are a Microsoft partner, and we partnered with them over the course of the past 3 years to bring to market the Microsoft Room System. So we call it the Smart Room System for Microsoft Link at Smart Technologies. And really, it was based upon the premise of, at the end of the day, if you've ever walked into a conference room that you're unfamiliar with, and you are expected to share some presentation material, or you're collaborating on a session, and you're faced with an HDMI cable and a VGA cable and a speakerphone and an audio overhead, and you have a visual projector on one side, the challenge most lay people have when they walk into those conference rooms is it's very daunting. And you know, without having a stable of IT professionals to support them, most folks with my skill set find it challenging to walk into a conference room that I'm not familiar with and be productive. And so at Smart, what we really want to do is we want to provide what we call a one-touch experience for Microsoft Link. So you should be able to walk into a conference room. That conference room is easily scheduled using Exchange. It registers as an asset on the network. And essentially, I as a user walk into my conference room at the pre-designated time, and I simply touch the screen, and it instantiates my Link call. So voice-enabled, video-enabled, I don't have to worry about which port I'm presenting from or switching content. It just works. And the feedback we've received from our customers is, that's great. That's exactly what we want. Now, the challenge we run into, however, is that it's also, and I think both gentlemen alluded to it, we have legacy assets inside the enterprise that need to be accounted for. So, you know, we're working very, very hard with Microsoft and certainly with Sonos to make sure that we have, you know, really good video interop story. But at the end of the day, it needs to be just simple. And so with that, I want to share again just a, oh, it didn't go.
It did. It just, yeah, it'll go.
Share a brief video here. Thank you. Don't try this at home.
In the near future, information workers around the world have crumbled under the weight of incongruent technology. Most products solved for single use, making investments in collaboration useless and costly to support. Just trying to conduct a simple meeting would become a tragedy of disengagement. A litany of gadgets, remotes, cables, wires, dongles, cameras, and flip charts have rendered the meeting room virtually unusable. Productivity fell in proportion to the proliferation of remotes in the workplace. The fate of humanity rested with the one company who could save productivity, enabling faster, better decisions with true collaboration. The one company, the chosen company, Smart Technologies.
So a little bit of levity. And what I hope you'll take away from that and sharing on a personal level is, you know, I've been in the workforce for about 25 years, and I reckon I work maybe 40 hours a week on a good week. We're 50 weeks a year, typically. And when I calculated the number of labor years I've actually spent in a conference room, it's over 8 labor years in a conference room. I can't really equate 8 years of productivity to that time that I spent there. And let alone when I was a participant remotely. And so it seemed that most of my professional career, I was a remote employee, and I had to work twice as hard as my peers who actually went to work on a corporate campus because I was remote. And so having the ability to have the human contribution recognized by not only folks in the conference room, but also those that are remote, to me is super valuable and very valuable for us at Smart. You can see some of the stats. You know, meeting times, it takes anywhere from 8 to 10 minutes. You know, remote attendees feel isolated. I went through that for many, many years. And, you know, resources oftentimes are hard to manage. When I get really excited about the ecosystem in terms of the entire Link collaborative stack, You know, I think Microsoft has done a really, really good job of making sure that, you know, all workloads are accounted for. So whether it's audio conferencing, web conferencing, voice, video, mobility, and desktop sharing. But where there was always a gap was in the meeting room. And so that's what we're excited to bring to market with Microsoft at Smart Technologies. One thing I did want to share, and I know this is not really conducive to a great demo, but just show of hands, how many have actually seen a Microsoft Room system in action? You have seen the demo. Okay, so I won't belabor that, so since you've seen it. But one thing I did want to share is we've actually taken the collaborative nature of the Room system to the next level. And so what we've done, and we just announced it yesterday at Smart, is we've enhanced the collaborative capabilities and the native whiteboarding capabilities inside of application sharing. So as an example, and sorry, guys, I know this is bad, but we're in booth 115, so for those of you that can't see it, feel free to pop on down to the booth. What we've done is now inside the context of a link meeting, I can share my application, which defaults to, this is called the Smart Unbound Whiteboard. So imagine an unlimited canvas where you have complete Zoom capabilities, graphic capabilities, and I can actually continue to ink over it, you know, while I'm working. So, you know, I can design Boris's prom dress here, you know, make sure he's taking into account his narrow hips and all of that. But my point is, it's no longer just in the conference room where I have this capability. So now, if I'm a remote attendee in a link meeting and I'm sharing a collaborative unbound workspace, I can actually contribute back to that, whether I'm on a device that's touch-enabled, so I can actually touch and ink-enable it bidirectionally, or if I'm on an old-school device, you know, I'll have to use my mouse and pointer. But the point is, you can actually simultaneously and multi-directionally contribute to content. So I happen to have just a, you know, a diagram here. It could just as easily be, you know, a PDF file, Word document, it doesn't really matter. You can ink over virtually any application and save that then in the native file format and take it with you to continue to annotate upon. So when you think about, you know, trying to enhance that that experience of the remote user and make it equivalent or on par with what we're experiencing in the conference room, you'll continue to see further, you know, iterations of what we're doing on the software side to make that experience that much better. That's all I had, sir. And happy to take any questions, you know, now, offline. We're at 1:15, so if I can, you know, demo anything further, be happy to do so. Thanks, all right, Scott. Thank you.
Can I get the clicker back?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thanks very much. So that basically gives you a really good view of how important the user experience is, right? All the way from the desktop, so when you're just sitting at the desk using it, whether it be a headset, handset, et cetera, making it so you have that one point. Also to the room system and how important it is that people can walk into a room system and not know what they need to plug in, et cetera. The next thing, and this is the really cool part, is the back office, right? Maybe I'm a little biased, but where we actually look at how you actually deploy it, you make it all work, right? Effectively where, you know, us as IT professionals and partners actually have to make this all work together. So, one last video.
Managing enterprise communications used to be simple. You built the network, you bought the equipment, and you controlled communications from point A to point B. Then came smartphones, apps and tablets, and this big thing no one could see called the cloud. Now, enterprises must rethink how they control communications that go through a global system of devices and networks beyond their control, which brings us to the Session Border Controller, or SBC. You can think of SBC as the network supercop. It protects the communications network against attacks. It authenticates the identity of calling and called parties. It enforces security policies such as blacklists and whitelists for every subscriber. And it directs traffic to, from, and within your network to avoid traffic jams. Sonus is the fastest growing SBC brand, with the broadest portfolio of Microsoft Link qualified SBCs on the market to serve every size business from 50-person offices to Fortune 500 companies to the world's leading service providers. Sonus SBCs not only protect your network, they monetize your network by enabling you to leverage new technologies like SIP trunking and unified communications. Sonus SBCs can help you communicate better, safer, and smarter across more devices, on more networks, in more locations. Your business depends on your network, and the world's leading networks depend on Sonus SBCs.
So that's very, very high-level overview exactly what a session border controller or an SBC is. Our session border controllers, and I'll talk about them in the different diagrams and how they fit in, are both, the lower-end ones are both session border controllers and gateways. They're hybrids. So that allows you to really migrate over to SIP trunks and migrate over to other pieces. They provide, obviously, superior audio quality and also provide statistics and reporting information, and I'll talk about how we've just released a feature where we can actually go into the quality of experience monitoring server for Link, so that the, you know, the session that was prior to me in this room actually touched on that, and we can now actually fill in those pieces from there. You need no additional software. You don't have to learn how to use another tool, so I'll dive in more detail about that. So integrating everything together, ultimately that's the goal of the SBC, right? So you have devices. If we look, you have vendor A on the left-hand side. You know, that could be a Cisco, an Avaya, Siemens. You have vendor B. You have the Link system. You now have a service provider, whether it's actually working off a SIP trunk or it's working off PSTN. And those all need to be worked and interlinked together. As I mentioned, a lot of those PBX vendors, you know, on purpose made sure that the stuff doesn't interwork. That's their whole goal. As it's on us, our goal is to make it work. We're a third party. We're independent. Right? We don't have a hidden agenda to try and stop interoperability. So effectively, we do the glue. We make things work together. That's our main goal, right? And we do it securely. And that's really the key part. So you have to ask yourself, when you're doing your Link deployment, do you want effectively a deployment that's half working, you know, transfers don't work, and you've got names missing? Or do you want it that gives a truly good user experience, right, for a very, you know, small incremental cost? Cloud interoperability. So everything now is moving to the cloud, right? Microsoft, in particular with Office 365, have done a great job of moving all the Link environments, et cetera, up to the cloud. The same problems exist when you actually come to drill in, right? Whether a company has gone through a round of acquisitions or started a deployment project to roll out a new IP PBX project and only took it halfway through, they're basically going to have a lot of different vendor pieces. So you may have Link hosted in the cloud, whether it be a, you know, dedicated environment or one of the ones from, you know, excellent partner deployed systems which have voice, right? Even though the 365 voice is coming soon, according to the keynote, obviously the partner deployed systems have it today. So, you know, with that, you're able to make it all work and click it all up together, and that SBC dials it up together. If you look at, like I mentioned earlier, doing a greenfield deployment is very easy and simple, right? You have your Link server, you have your Link clients, you don't have any phones to worry about, you have the Edge server, which is responsible for everybody that's coming in, basically without a VPN, you have a mediation server, you have the SBC, that traffic cop, and you hook up the service provider. And you're done, right? Nice and simple. As I said, 15% of them go like that way. I think, to be honest, from our experience, and obviously we'd get engaged more when he's doing deployments, it's more like 5% actually go this particular way, right? Add a SIP trunk and go. Or just hook it up to a PSTN trunk. You could use that as a TDM gateway, and off you go. You're off to the races. The reality is enterprises look a lot more like this. So you have Link. You have the SIP trunks, you have PSTN, you have SIP phones, right? You've bought all these devices to use with the PBX. You can now, instead of throwing those away, you can actually reuse them. Now, from a personal perspective, I would rather go with a headset. I'm not a big fan of the SIP phone, but if you have somebody in the legal department or, you know, find another department they don't like and they want to keep a phone, fine. You can do that. You can reuse that device. You can register it with the SBC. You can really enable that. You have analog devices. It's unbelievable. What we're seeing right now is the PBX replacement of Link era has started. Right? Our partners are talking about, we have 1,700 analog devices at one site we need to replace. And everybody goes, well, just throw them in the bin. You know, throw them in the trash. You don't need them. You're good. The problem is they're on an oil rig, and they're a safety phone. Or they're in an elevator, and they're a special form factor that has to work with a firefighter, or they control a sprinkler system that was installed in 1984, and these analog devices are absolutely everywhere. Can you whittle it down from 1,700? I'm sure you can, right? I'm sure there's phones and devices out there you don't need, but you can't whittle it all the way down. So you need to be able to support those analog devices, right? And that's where analog and terminal adapters, and SBCs like ourselves, which actually have analog ports on those, which you can plug them directly in, drive out where the PBX was, and you're good. So you can literally start off, you have the PBX involved. You can see on the left-hand side, we have a PBX, we do a smooth migration, and then later on, you can remove it and actually have the analog phones in there. Same is true for faxes. You do get SIP-based fax machines. We can interoperate with those too. But if the fax machine works or it happens to be part of your photocopier, find me a photocopier that has a SIP-based fax machine in. Right? They just don't exist yet. They will. There won't be a link one, right? So you basically need an SBC to make that all interoperate, to make it all work together. A couple of things you should look at when you're choosing an SBC, and obviously the Sonos SBCs all do this, right? But when you're actually doing your branch deployments, you want to make sure that your survivable branch appliance, your SBA, is properly sized, right? We actually have two different versions. One that's a lower cost, designed to handle up to 25 users, and another one that will scale up to 1,000 users. And making sure that it has enough horsepower and enough RAM to do that, right? Not a device that works great in a pilot, but then when you go into production, it kind of runs out of steam, right? So make sure it's properly sized. Make sure that the SBC has an easy-to-use wizard so you can make this system work quickly and are able to do all the different translation, SIP header manipulation, being able to translate different pieces. You've got to have all that. Drop-in installation. So almost 80% of the deployments that we do using Sonos SBCs are deployed in line with the PSTN. This diagram, and it's been all modernized and made to look all like, you know, like Windows 8 and Windows Phone, but the SBC is in the middle of a network, and what it's actually depicting is the PSTN is actually directly connected to the SBC and then onto the PBX. So you don't have to actually modify the configuration of the PBX. The PBX thinks it's talking to the PSTN, but in reality it's actually talking to the SBC, and the SBC is talking to the PSTN, and it's pulling off calls and feeding them to Link. And it does it in a way that you don't have to modify the configuration. It actually looks in Active Directory. And we pioneered this. This was a concept we came up with in 2007, where we actually look in Active Directory, see if the user's provisioned for Link Enterprise Voice. If they are, send the call over to Link. You can then rewrite numbers as well. It's all built into our routing system in the calls. So it makes it a lot simpler. It also means that you as partners can basically integrate the system, and you can hand the keys over to the customer. You don't have to keep coming back and coming back, which means you can move on to the next opportunity. So you need to make sure you have that drop-in installation. And then lastly, you need to make sure that you have interfaces like a SIP registrar that allows those legacy devices, SIP phones are legacy, and allow those to actually register in so you can still reuse those devices if you want to, right? Some of them being conference room devices. If for some reason you decide the conference room can't afford a link room system, I'm sure Scott would prefer that every conference room had a link room system. But, sometimes you may have a smaller one that's not applicable for that. Simplifying your link deployments. So another piece you can actually look at is how do we make the whole topology simpler? So why I say that, when you typically deployed a PBX, it was you put one per office, right? They were literally dotted all over the place. Why? Because the trunk lines coming in had to be tied to the local CO. SIP trunks have changed that whole dynamic. You can now deliver California numbers into Virginia, and you can deliver Massachusetts numbers into California, and you can get Australian numbers in the UK. The latency apparently is not great, but you can do it. Technically, it's possible. So you're able to do that. And what that means is, like with Exchange and others, you can do POP consolidation. You can consolidate everything up into a single data center. With all that in mind, though, of course, you need to make sure that you have that survivability. But you have a lot of flexibility there. And the SBC allows you to actually do a single dial plan. We have products like our policy server, which will actually allow you to deploy a single dial plan across the whole enterprise. All right, so it makes it really, really simple. You're not having to go to 400 different devices and configure them. We have customers that have 400 SBCs deployed, and now you're going to go and configure each one independently? No, that's going to be far too time-consuming. It can be all done in a central-based routing system. Lastly, don't compromise on features that are critical. So this is where we're going to talk about things like survivability and that quality of experience. So first one, the purpose-built device. So all SBAs, so SBAs are survivable branch appliance, are built to a certain minimum specification. So when we got that minimum specification at Sonos, we said, that's not good enough. We need to actually take it a level higher. So what we built is actually a true integrated appliance. So what do I mean by that? It's actually a device, because I don't know if you're familiar with an SBA, it actually has a little server module in it. It runs Windows Server 2008, and what do you have to do with servers? You have to patch them. You have to make sure they're properly firewalled. They're effectively, they're servers, right? They happen from Patch Tuesday. There's a far less political word for Patch Tuesday, but we'll call it Patch Tuesday since we're at a Microsoft event. But they suffer from Patch Tuesday. You also, too, that because that server is sitting there, you have to manage it as a separate device. We said, that's not going to cut it. What we want to do, rather, is take that server and actually put it behind a hardware firewall, and we're actually going to put links through into our UI. So you can actually, from a single UI, so you log in as one user, and that's AD enabled again, so you can use AD credentials. You log into the box. You go in, and you can see the status of the SBA. It actually gets Windows updates based on your, if you have a WSYS server, or it can use the public one as well. We actually provide an XML file on our website, once you're a deployed customer, of all the updates that we've tested to work with Link. Because believe it or not, it was quite a long time ago, but there was a Windows update a couple of years ago that broke OCS, right? So you have to make sure that you actually test them, and that we do that. We actually test and make sure that the updates will work. So you maintain this device like an appliance. So by putting it behind that firewall, by putting in automatic updates, you actually have a thing that you can now put it in a branch appliance, put it down in the branch, and you can patch it every 6 months, right? And that's a game changer versus every month. You can imagine with 400 of these deployed, if you had to go and do it every month, that's quite a few bodies, right? Quite a few people in IT. And yes, there's update servers, and yes, there's ability to do it automatically, but we've taken that away. We've actually provided in a way that's fully automated. And we also have a REST API that can go in and take it even further. So if you want to make it so that you have it from a one-click push to upgrade all of them at once, you can do that too. So we've really taken it and made it a true appliance. And we're the only one like that. The reason being because we built the hardware in that way. We actually put it behind. There's a single Ethernet. It's not just a power-sucking alien. It doesn't just have a board in there that's just pulling power and cooling. It is actually truly integrated. So make sure that you have a truly integrated appliance when you go for that. And that's true for the SBA side. It's true for the 911 side. We're doing it all in the same device, right? It really was built that way. Another thing, too, one of the gotchas a lot of people don't realize, Microsoft architected Link to do everything encrypted. That means all traffic uses SRTP. And, if you look at the world we live in today, unfortunately, it's become pretty malicious. It's pretty far away from the days of the original email in college campuses where everybody trusted everybody and everything was in the clear. Nowadays, if we don't actually encrypt stuff and we don't have a decent level of security, it's just a matter of time before something happens. I mean, whether it's your home router being hacked, I mean, it's just all over the place. And SRTP is a really good encryption protocol. It runs with a nice high encryption AES-128 counter mode, which means you get really good encryption. The problem is, a lot of the SBCs and gateways out there, when you enable SRTP, they lose 25% of their capacity. So you went out and you bought one that does 120 calls, and then you enable SRTP because you want the security, and it drops down to 90. And you're, that's not what I paid for. That's never an issue with our SBCs. You get what you pay for, right? You don't lose capacity when you do SRTP. That's something that's actually built on, it has a once and for all. That upstream architecture I mentioned, that drop-in installation, simplifies configuration, right? It makes it a lot easier. And then lastly, that security I was mentioning, it's all been tested by Miacom. So a third-party lab based in Jersey took our boxes and tried to run all sorts of intrusion tests and kicked it every which way, We run Nexus scans. We run all the different stuff on it to make sure that it is secure. And it's, so it's actually third-party verified that it is, you know, secure. You know, we've deployed our devices. The Sonos's heritage is in carriers. So we came from the carrier side to the enterprise. So with that in mind, you know, obviously a carrier getting hacked is a catastrophic event. So we have to make sure that our boxes are very secure. So you're getting carrier grade down into the enterprise. And that really comes with part of that. So just a couple of takeaways, you know, as I mentioned, you want that single UI. You want it to be managed as an appliance, not a server. It's going to cut down your OPEX if you have it managed as an appliance. It really must be secure as an SBA. The 3G, 4G, and I'll talk about in more detail exactly what that is now, and then properly sized hardware. So making sure that that server module that's in the device has enough guts to actually take the number of users. And we tested that way. Like, for example, we have a deployment in a fairly large city in Europe where they actually have 1,000 people in a branch office. Every user has two devices. So that actually looks like 2,000 people. So we made sure that we tested it to 4,000 so that it actually is tested and, you know, we'll set up to that numbers. It's not going to be a just find out and, you know, try it kind of scenario. 3G, 4G failover. So this is one of those really long names. I think I know the full name is Enhanced SBA with 3G, 4G Failover. The reality, this doesn't have to be 3G, 4G. This can actually be a DSL backup. It can be a cable backup. It can be any kind of a backup. And what's key here is not so much the backup routing. What's key here is how we actually interact with Link. So what is the whole purpose of this? The SBA, or Survival Branch Appliance, is a server sitting inside our box as an appliance that you run down at the branches. However, it costs quite a bit more than if you wanted to just put a small SBC or gateway device down at the branch. So that device is costing quite a bit more. So a lot of people go, I don't want to spend $3,000 or whatever the price is on an SBA. I would rather spend $500 or $1,000 and have something that I have a monthly payment on, in this case, a backup using 3G, and use that for when I'm in disaster recovery mode. So you're trading CapEx for OpEx. But if you've got a lot of remote sites, this makes a lot of sense. Right? This can be a very, very powerful way of providing it. And the nice thing is, too, when you lose that WAN connectivity, because ultimately you're backing up for when you lose the WAN connectivity, you still get all the features within Link. You still get presence. You still get your buddy list. You still get, you know, the ability to find people, which you don't get with SBA. SBA, you can actually call people, you can IM people, but you need to know their SIP URI. And, you know, I don't know how many people remember what their SIP URI is. Mine's pretty easy, but, you know, some of them are not. So sometimes that's not the easiest way to be able to make it work. What happens in this case, though, how do we do that? We actually build a tunnel over that 3G. It's an IPsec 256-bit encrypted tunnel, and we send that backup traffic through there. So we're constantly monitoring the WAN. So we're basically sending pings, you know, every minute, and when we notice the WAN goes down, we actually then send a packet over the backup link through that encrypted tunnel to Link, and we tell it, update the CAC policy. Because you may, if you're on 3G, for example, want to block video. Anybody that's tried to use video over 3G knows the experience is not so good. Over 4G, over LTE, it's great. Use it over 3G, not so good. Try it in an airport, for example. You can barely even get voice through it. But typically, if you don't have a great experience of 3G with video, you can get a couple of voice calls through. But any more than that, all the calls are going to suffer. So what we can actually do is say, I know that at this office I have a good quality 3G connection. And typically, remember, these are branch offices, so they probably be international, so they may not have a full LTE deployed now. So I know that I'm going to get solid 384K. So I'm going to say I'm going to allow two voice calls to go over that IP link, to go over that 3G link, and the rest force over the PSTN. And that's exactly what it does. So it actually forces over the PSTN. You can still dial into conference bridges. You can still make inbound calls, outbound calls. Everything still works. You're just getting forced over that PSTN. And it's actually seamless to the user. You still click on the buddy list, and I'm talking to somebody in headquarters, and It just hits over the PSTN. But the beauty of the solution is it's fully configurable. You know, when you go and you say, oh, I'm upgrading, they've put nice LTE in there, I'm now going to allow 10 calls to go over the IP side, but no video. Or, oh, video is good now, I can scale it. So it's actually the interaction with Link that makes this a really good, survivable solution. Anybody can do backup routing. It's building those tunnels, doing the monitoring, and actually interacting with Link that makes this unique. So lastly, quality of experience, QoE. How many people have deployed the QoE server with Link? Well, I was hoping it'd be more. I say deploying Link without QoE is like driving with sunglasses on at night, right? It's kind of a, you can do it. Is it the best experience? No. Is it the safest experience? Definitely not. The problem happens, of course, if you've got a perfect network and everything's good, yeah, you could probably do that. But if then something goes wrong, the user calls in and goes, I had a terrible experience. Now you go, well, was it the headset? Of course, it was Plantronics, it's not an issue, but you know, let's say they have a different headset. Is it the headset? Is it the Wi-Fi? Are they using Wi-Fi? Could I upgrade the Wi-Fi? Is it the LAN? Is it the network? Is it the SIP trunk going out the other side? All this information gets stored in QoE, excepting for that last one. Right? So today, you can do link-to-link calls, you get it in QoE. You can link to PSDN calls, you get it in PoE. If you do link to SIP trunks, you don't actually get the metrics from the SBC to the carrier. So it could be a problem with your carrier. And a lot of SIP trunks are delivered over the top, i.e. they're on the internet. And you have no way of knowing. So if somebody calls the help desk and, you know, you can go now, with this function that we've delivered in our Sonos SPCs, you can actually make it so that all those legs of the call are actually put into the QoE server. So you don't have to go and buy another package, a command center or something like that, and have a look in there, and then look in QoE and try and work out where the problem is. Directly from the Microsoft QoE server, you can see exactly what went wrong. So you go, you look, you see, oh, I can see the overall MOS score was 2.5. Ooh, that's terrible. Where's the problem? I look from the user to the network was great. From the network to the SPC was great. From the SPC to the SIP trunk was terrible. Okay, it's a carrier problem. I'm calling Bob's SIP trunks, wherever your carrier is of choice. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff you can do. You no longer have to rely on going to looking at different tools or anything. So this is something totally unique to ISPCs. We're the first to market in this particular functionality. We believe it's going to make solving voice quality related issues a lot easier. You deploy that QoE server. Most of the time, as I said, I would hope you deploy the QoE server anyway. And now all you have to do is basically enable the feature on our devices. There's no charge for it. It's built in. It's a base functionality. It just reports the stats. So now you've actually got all the stats for the calls all across all the different legs. And we will provide that MOS score information back into it. So it really does, you know, make it and stitch it all together. Sure. Yes, absolutely. And that's a big, important step, too. So not only does it provide it on the leg, and you get a card, that was a good question. So not only does it provide it on the legs that would go to the mediation server, if you were using non-bypass, it will do bypass pieces, and it will do on the SIP trunk piece. So you get the QoE information for all legs. You'll actually see all three legs, even in a media bypass case. So with that, we've actually already done the demo. So, yeah, skipping past that section. So as I said, just in summary, first step, make sure you have a well-defined strategy. Make sure you deploy enterprise voice early. Don't leave enterprise voice too long, because otherwise you're going to end up with a poor link experience. The quicker you deploy it, the better off you are from an experience perspective. Know how the company works, what devices, put in the room systems. Take an SPC. Make sure you have an SPC. It's very important to keep that network secure. There's a large number of people that say, I'm just going to deploy a direct SIP connection between my Cisco PBX and Link. And then the transfer doesn't work. And you don't get ring back. And this is somehow okay. You know, it blows me away that you would be thinking that it's okay that just because I happen to have a call forwarded to my cell phone, it's okay not to get ring back when somebody calls me. I mean, that, from a traditional telco perspective, would be unacceptable. Yet, if you do a direct SIP from Cisco to Link, that's how it is. And there's no solution but to deploy an SPC. Solves the problem. We provide the dynamic ringback. So make sure to deploy an SPC. And then secondly, with the SIP trunks, if you do the deployment directly to the mediation server, you're basically opening a domain join PC up to the public internet. If it's an over-the-top carrier, you're opening it to the public internet. And why would you do that, right? That's a huge security risk. That's something you really don't want to do. You can effectively, we have a software version of our SPC. It's not Link 2013 certified yet. It will be mid this year. I'll just be upfront about that. But you'll be able to run that directly on the Edge server and have a true secure solution. And then lastly, no compromises. So make sure you put in SBAs that are able to do all the capacity, support SRTP, and then deploy the QoE so that you have a really, really good experience. So with that, thanks very much. If you have any questions, please, do you don't mind coming up to the mic, that'd be great. Otherwise, we can just take them straight off. And I do have another three cards, so let's try and get some good questions.
Hey, Kevin, for that QoE new feature, is that a new version of the firmware that it takes to do that?
It is. So that's part of the 3.1 release.
3.1, and yeah. What's the feature called or whatever in the...
It's called Quality of Experience, so it's QoE directly in it. It's part of the 3.1 base license, so there's no charge for it. It's just when you install 3.1, you put the base license on, it just works.
Okay. So and does it work like all the other clients, is when a call finishes, then it collects that
yeah.
data and sends it back?
It does. And
through the mediation server then?
Sort of. We have to actually make it dump directly to the QoE, to the front end.
To the front end.
Yeah. So it does actually, it talks directly into the agent through there. But we've got all the pieces that make that work. And it is at the end of the call. We use statistics throughout the call, RTCP or RTCP XR, so we can get the other side's scores as well. And that's all stuck into the record.
Okay, I think that's fantastic. That's cool. Missing link.
Thanks.
Good morning. Hey, when you map the dial plan from the traditional PBX over
yep.
to the SBC, and create that one dial plan location, is there any risk of downtime with the PBX in a critical have-to-be-up environment, or how does, maybe share that,
so
how that goes?
So it depends how you do the deployment. If you do the upstream deployment like I was mentioning, we actually have the ability, and we have in the box, we have relays that can actually directly hook the lines together. So there is, you can basically be building your dial plans while the relay is still closed, so the PBX is running. And then, obviously, at some point, you have to open it and test. So there is going to be a small interruption period while you're making sure that everything's up and running and you have all the numbering plans correct. One of the nice things about Link 2013 is, you know, a lot of the numbering normalization can be done through Link. So we're agnostic, right? Obviously, for all the previous releases, you generally had to do all the manipulation in our devices. We like that, I'll be honest. Now you can do it all through Link, and I can definitely see the advantage of doing it through Link. But there are still some things that you need to do in the SPC or gateway. Like, for example, if you have a long-distance trunk that goes out to a Sprint for long distance and AT&T for local, I'll use a really old example, you need to do that, and that dial, you can have those trunks hooked up to it, and you can actually do the selection that you have to do on the local device, because only it knows what the different inter-ladder charging ratios are, so you can actually do it from there. And when you get bigger, so you scale up to some of our SPC 5000s, we have least cost routing and all the carrier kind of features you can put in there, and on-to-seize ratios. And this is a true carrier device you can bring to an enterprise. So we have devices that you can use all the way from a small five-person branch, scaling all the way up to 65,000 sessions. So very big offices. And we have big retailers, airlines, all using the bigger boxes with Link.
Devices that you guys
we
support?
We do. It used to be available on the website. Unfortunately, it's being migrated over, but we do have a list of what's been tested. So that will be up on the website pretty soon.
Thanks.
Yes. So what that is actually is what's known as the Sonos Policy Routing Server, or PSX. And what that is effectively it's a stateless proxy that all the SBCs talk to. And it contains the single dial plan to make it work across it. And that's we now actually make that policy routing system actually available on the SBC. We have what's called an ePSX, or an embedded PSX. And that dial plan is all monitored and managed on that single device. And then it's spread out to all the other ones, fully redundant, has a whole master-slave environment. So you can actually have a scale and maintain it in one place, one directory, and that spreads out to all the remote places. Yes. It sits inside the SBC. We do also, as I mentioned, have a software version of the SBC. So if you want to run that on the VM, you can. But typically, you would run it inside like that. Any more questions? Cool. Well, thanks very much.